good morning. So, meeting over about the looking for that plane.
Lou, you broke up. I didn't hear. I heard looking plane. Want to repeat it?
Okay, it might be tough. I don't have my amp. You said a Nova about the plane?
Yes, I did. I believe it was last week.
Yeah, I watched it also. So, you realized, did you catch how they, in ambiguity, they knew the circle, that great circle, based on the time from the plane to the satellite, but they had ambiguity as to whether it went north or south. And then they finally were able to solve that ambiguity. Did you catch that?
I'm trying to remember. I think the ambiguity, they resolved it to they were going south, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. And the problem was that the plane electronics actually would correct for the Doppler. So that's why if the thing was geostationary, if I'm geosynchronous, I guess, I don't know which is which. One is dead on, and one is when the orbit decays a little, and the satellite will shift a little bit off of that point. Well, that's what happened with the satellite, because the orbit was old, and it would slew back and forth in and out of the spot. So, even though the plane compensated for whatever Doppler that it was going towards the satellite, so that it looked the same to the satellite, the fact that the satellite actually moves a little bit, that provided the capability of getting a Doppler. So as the satellite would move, it was moving away from the plane or toward the plane, they could resolve that. That's how they figured out it was the southern arc.
Hey, if you hear nothing, don't feel bad, because the repeater doesn't come back on for another 40 minutes.
Oh, you're always minding the store. By the way, Lou, K8NY was looking for you. I don't know if he got in touch with you. That was two nights ago. And I believe brother-in-law, possibly?
Ah, yeah, that's correct. Okay. Yeah, I haven't been on that much. And hello, Eric.
Hello, yeah. Hey, by the way, were you recently transmitting on a certain other frequency?
The only other frequency would be the input of the southern machine. But I can tell you what's coming out of the satellite machine sounded almost like digital, I don't know what was going on.
It was also on UHF, I heard about an hour ago.
Yeah, well, I saw something that came in on UHF that disturbed me, so that's something I have to change. Anyway, I have Sheldon shut off, connected to this. I'm going to shut it down because I'm doing something, and then maybe in another 5 or 10 minutes, I'll set it back on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm probably going to hit the hay anyway. But I had John talking about that. And it was, so one's geosynchronous, if I remember, and the other's geostationary. I guess geostationary is when you're dead on the spot. Geosynchronous is you slew a bit off the orbit on each, you know, because I guess it's, now it's the ellipse is a little bit off the center or something. And that's what happened with this satellite, so that's how they were able to determine that. Anyway, good night, guys. Talk to you tomorrow. NY2H, clear. 7-3.
Lou, have a great morning. Talk to you down the log. And Eric, you can proceed with your work. And I'll be around, probably. And by the way, I'll probably get a lot of emails, because every time you and Dick talk about the digital television and the coverage and all of that, I get quite a few emails on that, so maybe we'll have some more questions next tech night. All right, I'll let you get to work. KC2WGB clear.
All right, good night to both of you. K2J.
12:35 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Delta, Papa Zulu.
that's not. I'm waiting for the beep. They give me a hard time and say, wait for the beep, Al, wait for the beep. And here I forget this late at night. This late in the early in the morning, there's no beep. Gentlemen, my name is Al. You know, Calus Keep 6 is our triple Zumbo, Zulu, or Don't Pick Zero, or 30 triple zombie. And we were just up tonight. I went out in the front yard. I wanted to look at my airplane to make sure nobody was trying to take it away. A little Cessna 152 sitting in my driveway in Oceanside.
Got a runway in your backyard?
I can get away with it. I'll put it in. Not very serious. I have a Cessna 152, and that's a 4646 Papa sitting in my front of my house on High Ranch on Yale Street in Oceanside. I'm not joking. I'm not high on anything.
And I overheard a conversation the other day that you were having about having Con Ed drop some power lines and taking that baby off down your block. I would be love to witness to see that. That would be a pretty cool experience to see.
Well, I'll tell you. I can tell you a little story. You got a little time. I put up a beautiful antenna system here by my house. I got my house about 7 months ago. Dropped around 5 G's on a phenomenal antenna system. I've been a ham for 57 years. And one little neighbor decided that it hurt the value of his property because it hated the value. Goes to my other neighbors, tells my other neighbors they didn't have a C of O, which he lied. They signed a petition, down came the whole system. Are you following me so far? Okay, so the whole system comes down. I've been in the communications business for years. Well, I can't say what I do. It would be commercializing, but a lot of people know me. I don't care. We sell and service amateur radio equipment. We sell ham radio gear all over the world. So that's what I'm involved in, communications, avionics, you name it. If it radiates, I get involved with it. So what happens is I'm a student pilot, and I've been a student pilot for many years. I never bothered to get my license. I've been too busy, but I got the hours. And, I'm a one-eyed student pilot. It makes it more interesting in the game. And I don't have a high-performance airplane. C-150, small wings, long-range tanks, low IFR, beautiful little bird. And you can check the numbers to see that I'm not smoking anything tonight. As I said, Nancy 4646 Papa. I had a Republic. And found out that when I went down to renew my medical, 69 years old, and it said my heart rate was a little too high. And my AME told me, if you put you through now, you may not pass the third class. And he said, he may say, hey, Grandpa, stay on the ground. So the old grandpa decided, instead of going through that, wait a while, and then, hold on, and then take it again. So I'm going to wait about 4 to 6 months, and I'll take it again. Chances are I'll pass it. Well, during that time, being that the neighbors did a number on me, and I got to do some avionics work on the aircraft. I have an avionics facility. I said, why not bring the airplane home? Nobody has an airplane in Oceanside. They all have boats. So I had my people take the wing, drain the tanks, purge the wings, pull the wings off, and bring the puppy to my driveway and reassemble it. Go ahead. Any comments so far?
I'm with you.
I didn't get that. Go ahead. I didn't get the comment. Go ahead, try again.
I said, so far I'm with you. This is KD2HJP.
Okay, so basically what we did, I brought the wings first. They had the wings put in my backyard. Besides lots of 1,000 square feet. House is about 5,000. About 4,750 square feet, high ranch. So the wings are in the backyard. John Hampstead throws me a couple of summonses. Having aircraft wings in the backyard, I can't store aircraft wings. All right, fine. So then I tell my people, we got to get the fuselage from Republic Airport over to Oceanside. Well, how do you get a fuselage? You get a flatbed tow truck. Put the puppy on the flatbed, bring it over. So they bring the fuselage over, they bring it in front of my driveway. My driveway, not on the street. In front of my garage. Well, it sits there for a day, and we're making arrangements to reassemble the whole thing. And I get a call from the dear town of Hempstead,
somebody's high on the food chain, and you got salvage in your driveway. I said, what do you mean salvage? It's an airplane. They said, no, it's not an airplane. It's salvage. And if you don't make it into an airplane, we'll hit your grand a day fine. Follow me so far?
MAC, yeah, I'm following you.
Okay. So I get my team, and they put Humpty Dumpty together again. Takes almost the whole day. Plane goes back together. Now it's a full Cessna. Less, you know, there's no gas in the tanks or anything like that. But everything else is ready to go. Complete airplane. So now at 4 o'clock, everything gets finished. Three police cars drive up. The cops get out. I'm standing by the plane. And they walk up toward me, and I put my hands out and say, officers, am I under arrest? They look at me and say, nah, you're not under arrest. You got your airplane on your own property, and there's no law that says you can't have an airplane on your own property. People have boats on their property. Well, so the local Gestapo, as they say, has no problem. Well, it's getting interesting, because the neighbors are really going crazy. Well, they're going a little crazy, not fully crazy. So a neighbor comes up to me and says, you know, why do you have an airplane in your driveway, okay? Now you want to hit a classic answer of all.
Because you can.
If I hear on my radio system, when I get on my, you know, all my antennas up, I have a 7-10 up now, high gain, all band, big vertical antenna in the backyard, high tower. If I hear on my radio system that there is another Sandy, I'm going to tell the neighbors, get the cars off the street, because I don't want to scratch my wings getting out of here. Go ahead.
Now, my only question for you is, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all, I'm on your side with this one, but from the devil's advocate point of view, is the town of Hempstead going to be able to give you grief over an airworthiness certificate for the airplane? I'm not sure if you have an airworthiness certificate at this point, being that you assembled it in your driveway. I don't know if you have an AMP certificate to do the assembly. But without an airworthiness certificate, is it considered an airplane? This is KD2HJP.
2HDP, K6DPC. Okay. First of all, I have an AMP with his team taking it apart, and he's an IA. He's with the airlines. He's a pretty well-known mechanic. Right, it does not right now have an airworthiness certificate. It has to go through a complete situation to get it, which, you know, there's no problem hypothetically going through it, making sure it has to meet inspection and you get an airworthiness certificate. This time, it does not have an airworthiness certificate. So that's number one. Number two, before I even, hypothetically, let's say if I wanted to really take it off here, I would have to get, number one, the FAA, who I talked to, explained the situation. They said, I have to get the town of Hempstead to write it off to be able to do this. So I'm not worried that much about taking it off. It's more of an issue of proving that, look, they can have their boats, I can have my airplane. Maybe I'll take it apart again, take it down to the Republic, have my AMP finished men put it together, have the IA sign it off, getting there with a certificate on it. That's not a real problem. That's very familiar with the rules and regulations. Did you get that, by the way? Wait now a long period of time. There's no beep. Nobody's going to come in on ILLP.
Yeah, without the beep, it's just I like to give a little bit. I caught you, and I'm with you so far. It's sounds like it's definitely going to be an interesting argument. I'm sure obviously your neighbors, at least some of them, aren't happy about the situation, so you're going to have a little bit of a battle on your hands, it sounds like. And the town of Hempstead, when they tend to stick their heels in, and unfortunately they have pretty deep pockets, so you know how that goes. But I believe the law is on your side, from my opinion. Sounds like I would agree with the road argument that, yes, people do put boats on the side of their house all winter long in practically every town on Long Island and get away with it. And there's no difference in the town of Hempstead. And an aircraft is an aircraft. It's registered. It's insured. It's a motor vehicle. I can't argue with you there.
Okay. No, I like you. That's cute. No, it's registered 608 Yale Street. It is a motor vehicle. And this, do you have deep pockets? Let me tell you something. My pockets are so deep. When I stick my hands in my pockets, I can tickle my toes. Okay? I have a legal team that's willing to do this pro bono all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. And if it gets down to a fight, this old 69-year-old guy likes to, let's say, rumble. And if it goes to the Supreme Court, it'll be one of two things. I win, I won't care if they have the boats on their driveways. I lose, every boat is going to be back in the water.
Yeah, people tend not to look at both sides of the leaf in that situation. More power to you. I hope it's fruitful for you. You got to realize also that elections have a lot to do with it in the town of Hempstead too, and with the political stance and the way things work out. You know, and I don't like to get into that aspect of it on the radio, but you know how that works out. Politics and, you know, party changes or seat changes. The rules could change tomorrow, so you might not even have to go that far.
A6DPC. Well, I'm looking at it this way. You know, why should they pick on me if with an airplane there's not making issue of boats? You know, it's going to, you know, they started something. They started something because the labor went and lied to my neighbors, and this judge wrote off my antenna system, and I had to take it down. 5G's is going to cost me to put it back up, okay? And I'm figuring, hey, I'm in the avionics business and the communications field. I have to do some work on my airplane. I took my airplane apart to bring it here. If it means taking it apart, you know, to bring it back to Republic and then have it, you know, put back together and written off properly with, you know, airworthy certificate, so be it. But while it's here, from 4 to 6 months, I don't want to be hassled. And the plane is in the driveway. Anybody is welcome to look at it. They want to take pictures of it. I have a New York State teaching license. I taught. I'm going to go to local schools here in Oceanside, talk to the principal and say, look, young kids today don't have a chance to really go on a general aviation airport. I have a badge from the PSA, the Republic, when I go to my plane and everything. And I say, look, Wednesdays in the afternoon, if any teacher wants to plan a field trip, come down 608 Yale, I'll be here, and I will explain to the kids all about the airplane. And I don't worry about waiting a long time. There's no beep. Nobody's going to break in on the IRLP.
Yeah, but there was another gentleman in this morning that I started talking with, and I didn't want to exclude him from the conversation. I don't know if he's still out there, but it sounds like your argument is valid. Again, in my opinion, the only question I had, and it seemed like you had it covered, was the airworthiness aspect of it, and with the certification of an aircraft, when it is considered an aircraft, is if it's certified or not. And I'm not sure of that question or that answer. I'm sure you are. But, when is it an aircraft? When it's certified, or is it not an aircraft if it's not certified? But it seems like you have already answered that question.
KD2HGB, KD6DP. Better station, you're still in there. I didn't mean to leave you out, over.
That's okay. I'm just sitting here listening. I'm kind of dumbfounded by this whole thing. I'm just listening.
Okay, you want to throw in any comments?
Not really. I just don't know what to say. I never heard of such a thing.
Let me tell you a cute one. Neighbor comes up to me, and I was talking to me, one of my neighbors, and she said, why did you put the airplane here? And I looked at her, and I said, I've come from the third planet from the sun. I didn't come to cause any problems, and your neighbors are hassling me. She looked at me, she didn't realize the third planet from the sun was Mother Earth.
That gave me a chuckle. You come from the planet Vulcan.
I almost was tempted to tell her I didn't want to land the saucer on my lawn. I converted it to an airplane, so it won't bring in too much interest.
Well, unfortunately, at this moment, I've just reached my J-O-B, so I must sign. I have to start up my day and get my day progressing, but I wish you luck in your adventure here. I hope it pans out for you. I'm sure we'll have a conversation about this again in the future. I know I monitor on the side a lot, and I hear your back and forth with other hams. So this is K2HJP. I'm going to sign. This is my final, and Cleo, I hope you guys have a good day. And I forgot your call sign, but the gentleman I was speaking with earlier on vacation, I hope you make the best of your day and it works out, and you have a good afternoon. I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay, K2HJP, K6DTC. Have a good day. Let me flip it over to the other gentleman.
It would be nice if you put a picture of this whole thing on YouTube. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see that plane sitting on your front lawn there. That sounds interesting.
Well, a post here yesterday taking pictures. I think there may be an article that may go viral.
I'll keep an eye out for that. But I don't usually read the post. I guess it'll be online. I can check it out online. But it's just people are living too close together, and they're in everybody else's business now.
Well, it'll be an interesting point. You know, I'm 69 years old. People say I'm a very interesting guy. I don't know. Maybe I am, or maybe I'm a real dud. But I believe, you know, if you do something and you do it within the law, fine. You know, if you do it, it's not right, that's another thing. If I had, let's say, a statue on my lawn that was repulsive, or if I had something else in my house that was repulsive, but here, an airplane, a beautiful airplane, by the way, blue and white, it's right in my driveway. And, you know, it's beautiful. One of my neighbors said to me the other day, he says, I woke up in the morning, I looked out my window from my bedroom, and I saw the plane, and years ago I learned to fly on a 172. And he says, this thing brings up the standard of the block.
Yeah, I can see that. It is interesting to see it there. Actually, some of these boats are kind of ugly.
Oh, yeah, and also you look at some of these basketball courts they put on the sidewalk for the kids to play in the street. That's ugly. It's a basketball court. So I don't mind, you know, the kids want to play. It's great. I'm not going to say it's not nice. You shouldn't have it on the street. But here, you know, I have my airplane. It's in my driveway. It looks nice. And basically anybody who wants to come by and take a picture, you know, and I've had many people come by and take pictures, and if I'm there, I tell them about the plane. I came back a night ago, 11:30. I drove up. I see a young couple. One was standing, a gal was standing by the plane. Her boyfriend took a picture of her, and I saw him switch around. So I got out of the car. I said, hey, give me the camera. I'll take a picture of both of you by the plane.
I think I would be a little worried about somebody vandalizing it. I hope you have some way of watching it. Somebody come by and take some equipment out of it or damage the plane. That's one thing I'd be worried about.
I got three cameras monitoring it at all angles. I'm just finishing putting a laser system in around the aircraft. And I have a dog, a Sheltie, that anyone gets near the driveway barks like there's no tomorrow. And I've got microphones where he likes to be by the window when he barks. I'm going to go through a PA. And you'll hear barking so loud around the house that anybody who's smart enough, they just say, hey, that must be a big dog. Let me get out of here.
Okay, I'm a little dumbfounded again, especially about the lasers. I guess you're okay then. But I guess I'm going to have to check this one out. This is one for the record books, I think.
Well, my address is 608 Yale Street. Bring it up on Google.
Yep.
Drive by, take a look at it, and I'm getting my other car, having to have some painting on it, touch up. I have a Chrysler 300 with a big ham antenna in the back. HF. And if you happen to see the car, you know, just knock on my door. If I'm there, I'd be more than happy to have an eyeball with you.
Sounds interesting. I just gonna have to take it apart again to bring it down to Republic.
Well, see, there's two ways to do this. If I got a situation where if I pass the medical, which I'm hoping I will, I'm basically a one-night pilot, 69 years old, and I've been so busy through my life, I've never bothered to take a flight test as far as, you know, getting the private. I've had always a student pilot's license, and I was going to finish off and take the flight test. I have the hours, I have the requirements, the whole nine yards. But if, let's say, the medical situation where I can't get it back, then I will either take the plane, take it apart, flatbed it down to Virginia, where my son-in-law is a retired Air Force and he's a private pilot, give it to my daughter and son-in-law as a gift. But if I get the medical and everything is good, and if I can't get the town of Hempstead, let me take it off on the street next to me, I'll flatbed it, put it back to Republic, and then I will reassemble it, certify it, and I'll play with my bird.
I don't know too much about being the pilot. Do you have to fly a certain many hours every year to maintain a license?
No, the way it works, a private pilot's license is good indefinitely. It can only be suspended or revoked. But to be able to fly an aircraft, you have to have what's called a current medical. Now, under 40, you have to take a medical exam prior by an AME, a medical examiner. It's good for 5 years. Over 40, same thing, but it's good for 2 years. Well, being I'm 69, my AME says, Grandpa, every year I want to check you out. Which I have no problem with that, because if I don't meet the specifications, I have no business being up there.
Ah, okay. I didn't know that. Now, when you take this thing off, you'll need a flight plan, right?
Well, first of all, let me tell you a few other facts. To be current, let's say, if you want to take somebody off, a student pilot cannot take a passenger, number one. Private pilot can take a passenger. When you're a private pilot, you have to do 3 takeoffs and landings within 90 days during the day if you want to take somebody up during the day. Now, if you want to go up at night, take somebody, 3 takeoffs and landings within 90 days after sundown. That makes you current. And the point is, the FAA is very specific in their rules and regulations. When you say flight plan, in what respect? Tell me a little more what you mean by flight plan. Maybe I'll try and explain it to you. How's that?
You're not taking off from an airport. You got to be careful not to run into commercial traffic. If you have to take off and stay low or something.
Okay. First of all, we have airspace above 17,999 feet. We have Class A airspace. That's basically where all the heavy iron hangs out. Sure, they come down through a corridor, you know, if they're going to come into a landing, depending on the airfield, so on and so forth. You have Class A, Class B, Class C, Class E, Class G airspace. And the specifications for this airspace, like around the Nassau County, Queens, Manhattan, it's all Class B. And Class B means you're under ATC control, you have to have a transponder so they know where you're at. And you, let's say you want to, the rules of flying under 18,000 feet. First off, when you're flying from 0 to 179 degrees on the compass, magnetic compass headings, you fly odd for 500 feet if your visual flight rules, VFR. And for 179 degrees, so you fly even plus 500 feet. If you're flying instruments, it's just odd and even altitudes. Everything is based on the magnetic headings. Runways, when they say a runway is runway 7 or runway 21 or runway 31, that is the magnetic heading of the runway. So if they say you're going to land, let's say, in runway 9, well, the reciprocal landing on that runway would be 7, 270 versus 90 degrees. So everything is, you know, there's a lot of abbreviations used in a lot of things, but, you know, once you get familiar with, you know, what they call Federal Air Regulations, And, you know, you follow them, and now it's very tight ever since September 11th. Go ahead.
And it sounds kind of complicated. They have special rules for helicopters. I knew some guys who used to go out east somewhere, and they used to fly gliders, and they didn't have to. There's no controlled airspace out there. They were, as long as they stayed in that area, everything was okay. Then the military has its own rules too. You have to stay out of the air airspace, I'm aware of. And I guess around here, there's an awful lot of air traffic.
Oh yeah, look, over here, I learned to fly in Los Angeles. I was in Santa Monica Airport a long time ago. And now, with everything going on, especially, let's say, the New York area, you've got Kennedy, LaGuardia, Newark. These are large airfields. Small airplanes don't go around those areas. Small planes, they come around the Republic, MacArthur, you got a few other fields on Long Island, and you got a lot of small airfields. Now, what you do, let's say, the main thing in flying, we call pre-flight planning. Let's say you want to fly to, get a $100 hamburger, they call it. You want to fly Danbury for lunch. Okay, so you take a look at the sectional. You first plan how long it's going to take you to get there, the distance. Make sure you have enough fuel on board. I like to top the tanks. And full tanks gives me about almost 500-mile range with a 45-minute reserve. And everything in flying is thinking ahead. It's not like a car where you go in, start the engine, and goodbye. Before you even go into that airplane, you do a very serious pre-flight, a good inspection of that airplane. Because you can't go out if something is wrong and do anything up at 5 or 8,000 feet. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can see that. I was in the Air Force. They have their own rules. They do what they want. But as a civilian, I guess there's a lot of rules you have to follow. And safety, of course, is a big one. I was just surprised that you could actually take that off legally. Would they really allow you to do that? To take it off in the middle of the street like that?
Oh, no. This is going to be an interesting thing. I got to go appeal to the town of Hempstead, explain what I want to do, and if I can, the fathers of Hempstead, who give me so many summonses now on my poor airplane, it'll be interesting. And they say, can't be done. The FAA, I could work with. So I went to talk to the FAA, and they said, well, try and go to the town, see what you can do, and then the FAA will get involved, the local Gestapo will get involved. It'll be interesting. But the main thing is now, I just want to make sure that the town of Hempstead doesn't come up with some cockamamie rule that you can't have your airplane in your driveway. Because then it's going to be fun. Because as I said, the town has deep pockets. When I put my hands in my pockets, I can tickle my toes.
As a side note, years ago I used to work for AIL in Comac. And the West Industry Court around the corner was a calibration lab, and they had some pretty big buildings over there that were spread out. And one afternoon, when I was taking a break, I saw a couple of helicopters coming in. And one of them actually landed on the front lawn and let some executives out. And it wasn't shortly, but within an hour after that, the police showed up and arrested everybody. And then later I found out they had actually come in from a cruise ship from the South Shore. And I never got any more information about it, and I don't think it ever made the papers either.
Well, it sounds like somebody had a lot of bucks, and the plane had the frugal helicopter on the plane, and then they figured, well, they just landed. So you just can't land an aircraft at a place that, let's say, it's not a helicopter pad. Okay, if you run into a problem, be it an airplane or a helicopter, if you have to make an emergency landing, firstly, my philosophy is the pilot, if it's a small airplane, is expendable. You don't want to try to take anybody on the ground with you. That's number one. And if you land it and it's a legitimate thing, you have an engine problem or something, the FAA will work with you. You just bring your airplane in, the Shohomanshu you win are out of place. As good as the FAA, the whole thing is they can hang you. You don't pull that. My philosophy is, being I had a base in the Republic, I turned around, there are two types of propellers I could have on my Cessna. It's either a cruise prop or a climb prop. A cruise prop is more efficient when you're up to altitude. You lean back as far as the RPMs, you get the more distance traveled, the amount of consumption of fuel per hour, okay? Well, I chose to change the prop and put on a climb prop. And I did this, being on that takeoff run, you start climbing out, your engine is running as it balls to the wall. The chances of failure of that engine on takeoff, it's pretty high. You know, you can throw a rod, something could happen. Well, with a climb prop, you get up to a higher altitude in less period of time, which gives you more options. You can't make a 180 and go back. Because first of all, you'll be landing, you know, downwind. You want to always land into the wind.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Was I keying it or not?
We lost you there for about a minute. I don't know what happened.
Where did you lose me?
We're talking about how you changed the prop for safety sake for climbing.
Okay, you lost quite a bit. Okay, hold on. I don't know what happened here with the rig. I think there's a timer on this rig, too. Okay. Basically, a climb prop will get you up faster for a given amount of time. The chances of failure on a takeoff is more on a takeoff because you're putting the engine through maximum. The throttle is all the way in, and it's, you know, it's working for all it's worth. Make sure I'm still in there. Okay, so once you're climbing out, let's say you experience a failure. Something, you throw a rod or something with the engine. Well, you can't turn back. What you have to do is look around, set yourself up for a glide, shut your fuel valves off if you see you can't, you know, the engine won't work. It's dead. And you don't want the fuel on if you have to make an emergency landing because your chances of a fire are a lot more. Then you look for a spot. Generally, if you're, let's say you get out of a more rural area, if you happen to see some animals flying over some wealthy areas where they may have horses or something or a stable, you'll see the animals. Your rear ends will always face the wind. You want to try and land into the wind to maintain some control. You find your spot, you set yourself up a pattern. You want to go downwind, base, approach, and bring it in. And see, once you're on the pattern, even on landing, if you have a powered aircraft, you fly a pattern. 1,000-foot AGL above ground level, and you set yourself up to come around, and then you come in on your approach, and you bring it in, and you flare. Well, you do the same thing in an emergency landing, but you just have to know you have no power. If you're coming in a little short or anything like that, you've got to do some real serious planning, because you'll land way before your spot. Go ahead.
I hear you. Well, I was in the Air Force. I was in the Tactical Air Command. And these guys, you have no gliding capability on any of this stuff. They lose power, it's all over. But they do have an egress system, which is successful, completely successful, I think they say, 1 out of 10. And fatalities are also around the same, 1 out of 10 in the opposite direction. And then between, well, there's all kinds of things. Busted legs, backs, and tires burned, whatever. Not 100% out of these aircraft.
Hold on, I just want to check something. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Well, see, when you're talking a jet or, you know, a fighter aircraft, remember, that's kept up by thrust. And when you have no thrust from that engine, it is going to come down pretty rapidly. Or even a large military transport. So, you know, you're really making that thing stay up with the thrust of the engines. A small aircraft, like a Cessna, Piper, you know, it has a certain amount of glide ratio. But still, you know, it's a point where you have to do the planning, and you always have to have the feeling, wherever you are, when you're up there, what do you do if that corkscrew in the front stops? And you're always thinking ahead, you know, and thinking, well, if I have a problem, where am I going to put it? How am I going to put it, and so on and so forth. Because, see, as I said, flying is thinking ahead, it's common sense, and it's not being a hot dogger.
I guess if you run out of power, if high enough, you can bring it down pretty fast glide slope. Bring it down pretty fast, and then you have enough speed to land it pretty nicely, I would imagine.
Well, remember, if you run out of power, you have the altitude, you have a lot more options. And even though you may be way up there, let's say 5,000-7,000 feet or higher, once you get over the place where you feel you want to make your emergency landing, then you plan it out as you would go if you had power with the aircraft. Because when you land, basically, just throttle back. And, you know, once you get in position, you set yourself up, you have no power, because you're coming in to a landing with no power. But you have the option when the engine is in good shape. If you see you're a little shy, you give a little power, you know you can get enough to bring it over the threshold, and you power back, and you drop it, you bring it in. So, you know, if you have power, you have a lot more options. And generally, even if you're going to fly into an airfield way out there, you get the directions that the wind is, the active runway, there's something called the ATIS, Air Traffic Information Service, in a controlled field. And you have all this information ahead of you before you come into this controlled field. So we don't know how you're going to enter the pattern. And the pattern is 1,000 feet AGL above the ground. You enter the pattern at 45 degree on the downwind side. Once you go 45 degrees on downwind, and you're being at the tower will let you know, they'll see you and you'll tell them you're being the tower. They'll tell you if there's other aircraft in the pattern, what number you are, and then they'll advise you you're going to make an extended downwind, or they may say, we have somebody X number of miles out, make a close downwind to turn base. An uncontrolled field is a little different. Let's say you want to fly into a non-control field.
Repeater, timeout.
Are you there? T6DTC, copy?
I may see you, copy.
All right, where'd you lose me?
Lose you.
You got the point that when you enter the field, you enter 45 degrees on the downwind leg, and the pattern altitude is 1,000 feet AGL. Above ground level.
Yeah.
Also, as you're coming in, and you listen to the ATIS, they give you the current altimeter setting. Now, the altimeter setting is the barometric pressure you dial into what we call the Colesman window of the altimeter. So this way, the altimeter is reading accurately. So when you're coming in, and you're coming in, you would level, let's say you're staying at 1,000 feet AGL, so that you're coming around that downwind to base to approach, you have a reference point. So once you are on the approach, then it's a point where when the tower, if it's on control, what you do, you fly over a small airfield, 2,000 feet AGL. Once you see what they call the windsock or tetrahedron, it tells you what the direction of the wind is. So by knowing the direction of the wind, you know how to set yourself up and make what we call a pattern entry. And once you make your pattern entry, then you come in for your landing.
Sounds like a lot of things you have to do in a very short period of time. I think that'd be a little stress.
Nah, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to fly. You know, it sounds complex, but it's mainly, you know, once you get familiar with it, the student pilot, your instructor goes through a lot of things with you. You wind up taking a written test, and then you have to take a flight test with a designee and the FAA, or I have to take it with the FAA directly, which I don't mind. Well, I'm going to take this thing when I have a little time. And it's a very interesting hobby or sport. It's got a lot of things involved in it, but if you're basically pretty meticulous and you're judgmental and you're not really a cowboy, it can be one hell of a hobby.
In the Air Force, I always had an interest in it, but never really pursued it. Back then, it was pretty costly. Being in the service, I didn't have the money to do that, so I was just a maintenance guy.
Well, and the Aero Club had a couple little airplanes. It didn't cost really anything but maybe the fuel and stuff like that. They got their licenses.
Frankly, I've never seen that on a tactical airbase.
Do you ever do a little research?
Well, not really, but I've been on a few Air Force bases where I've never seen anything but fighter aircraft. I've never seen anything like that at all. Except maybe Nellis. I was at Nellis, they had something like that.
Yeah, I think I knew one or two fellows that were in the Air Force. They were based in Nellis, and they were in the Aero Club. And it didn't cost them very much to fly. A couple of you fellows were, you know, CFIs, certified flight instructors, and they learned to fly. See, even, let's say you get out of the military and you want to get, become a pilot, let's say flying for the airlines, it works. Under the GI Bill, they will not pay for the private. If you get the private, the GI Bill will pay for all the other things above private all the way to ATP, Air Transport Rating. But if they, see, the military would not pay for the private. So if they paid for the private, everybody would go for a private pilot's license. So here, you have to put out for the private, but above that, all the training is covered.
Even back then? Like back in the 70s?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. Double check it. I knew a lot of fellas that went all the way up to ATP, and you know, they had to pay for their private training, but then the government, under the GI Bill, they covered all their other education.
I haven't really looked into it, so I really don't know.
Now, I don't think it changed it, you know, they may have, but I know, you know, a lot of these, a couple of people, you know, who I know are, you know, captains. And that's how they wound up, you know, getting out of the service, and they got their, you know, commercial instrument and ATP, air transport ratings. And it's very expensive, because the rental, you know, the rental of the aircraft, the flight instructors, it's not a cheap venture. There's, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, as a matter of fact, put into a fellow who flies military. When they put them through the training, it's the government pays a fortune to have them be a jet pilot. Or cargo pilot, or whatever.
Yeah, they got deep pockets too, so it's not a problem for them. But privately, that's another issue. And then, frankly, when you're in the Air Force, they put you to work 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, so there isn't much time for anything. So let you do it when you get out.
Oh, I agree. But, I mean, if you, let's say if you go into the Air Force and you pass necessary exams through the flight school. It's a very rigorous thing, very thorough, and the government pays a lot of money to put out a naval aviator.
Most people don't make it. God's becoming a fighter pilot is very, extremely difficult. It requires a lot of, besides the knowledge to do it, requires a lot of physicality. You have to be in good physical shape, and you have to go through survival training, and they put you through a lot.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, you have to be the best of the best when they put you through the selection program to take you into the flight school. They really go through you, you know, between physically, mentally, scholastic ability, because, you know, you're sitting in classes, and there's a lot to know when you have a jet fighter, and you're, you know, the one guy in that plane, and the plane is very complex with the systems it has and everything else, but if you go through it, and you become a top gun, you know, you're a top gun.
That's, being able to do all of this is one thing, but on top of it all, you want you to have a killer instinct. A lot of people don't know that.
Well, I don't know if you could say a killer instinct. You know, a lot of the guys, you know, let's say, went through, you know, flight training in World War II. And, you know, when you're up there and you're qualified and somebody's coming at you in another aircraft and they're firing a machine gun, you get your killer instinct pretty fast. It's called survival.
You mean some really having a bothers them. They don't have have the explain it, but some people are a little more.
You're breaking up. I don't know if you're not holding the mic or what. No, you're right. The personality has a lot to do with it. Not everybody, you know, has a mindset where if push comes to shove, they have to, you know, take somebody down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's what they're looking for. They don't make it, they swarm too.
Yeah, I hear you breaking up. Are you holding the mic all the way?
I hope so. I don't know if it's what it is. That's not the carry.
I don't know if somebody's playing games or not. No, I'll tell you, it's interesting, you know, because I know a couple people I know that went through, you know, became commanders. Yeah. And you get a commander rate and everything. So if they fly with military. And they told me that between the schools and then you have to go, you have to go talking, go to a shrink, and they try and analyze you and see where your head's at. It's a whole situation, but if you go through all the different things involved, and then you get into the flight school, the military, then you wind up being an Air Force pilot, a Navy pilot. And they want you for so many years, and they figure once they train you, you're not just going to put in 4 years and walk away. They want to be able to use you for X number of years. And most of the fellows stay in, and they'll wind up many times you're retiring from the military.
Yeah, it's a good career. I think we're not meet soon because probably guys get ready to go to work. They're mobile now.
I can't figure out if somebody's putting the carrier on you. Something isn't just happening. I'm in an area where I can't really make some tests. Listen, let me let you go. It's been a pleasure. And anytime you hear me on, yell at me. And normally I'm not on this early in the morning, but I had a lot of things that were bothering me, and I couldn't sleep. I was asleep early. And right now it's 5:33. Got a couple things to do. 6 o'clock, I'm going to take a ride out to Dunkin' Donuts and get a cup of coffee. About my day. And, are you on during the day at all, or primarily just in the morning?
I'm on vacation. I'm never up. Really sleeping. This is unusual for me.
No breaking in and out. I don't know. Maybe someone's putting a carrier on you. You know, we have a lot of trained seals on this repeater to get my drift. But there you go. It's been a pleasure. Anytime you hear me on, yell at me. Keep 6 dirty purple zombies in Oceanside, New York.
Okay, thanks a lot. Interesting comment. This is a... Maybe something's going to... Keep an eye on it. The, report. To MAC.
Hey, by the way, I didn't get your handle.
The Alpha Charlie.
Charlie, it is carriers of jerks play games. Okay, Charlie, name is Hal. It's been a pleasure. Have a good day. K6DPC is going to be QRZ and QRT.